How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Column Lines, the co-founder of IDPAL. They help you with real-time customer verification, cut down on fraud, and increase sales. Here's my chat with Column.
Column, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Quite a transition there, wasn't it?
Yeah, straight in.
See what happens behind the scenes,
right? No messing.
Welcome. Good to have you in. You're definitely 2024 first person wearing shorts in the pod.
Oh, that's summer's kicked in, hasn't it? May 1st.
We're here, is it?
Yeah, we're here.
we were meant to be doing a very serious business prep chat there. We end up talking about holidays, life, family, everything but business.
Yeah, well, sometimes that's important as well, you know?
Dude, it's, to be honest, way more important.
Yeah.
What do you do?
So I set up a business in 2016 called IDPAL. We do identity verification. So the easiest way to explain it to people is if you're setting up a bank account and you need to verify who you are, we're kind of the company behind the scenes there. So, you know, we're obviously in a world as well where a lot of stuff is done remotely. So the ability to prove who you are from the comfort of your own home or wherever you are on a bus or a train, and then give the confidence to the business that they're dealing with a real, genuine live person as well.
That seems incredibly timely considering what came 4 years later.
Yeah, so again, I always kind of talk about right time, right place, but right time, right place is fine, but you also need to have the actual business behind it and the proper structures in place. I don't think that really accelerated things too much, if I'm honest. That's kind of, I think the world and the market had started moving in terms of kind of remote. So if you think about all the neobanks and all these, they were all around and they were going strong at it. So
well, they were the ones I thought of as you were explaining to me. They were the ones, because Senna Brevoluta, kind of remember kind of going, oh, tilt up, tilt down, turn left, turn right. Yeah, I think that was the first time I did it.
You don't want to be doing that anymore. They're very easy to spoof.
Really?
Yeah, so there's not to bore people or get into too much technical detail.
That's what we're here for. Well, not to bore people. We're here to get on into all the nerdy details.
Yeah, so there's passive liveness and active liveness. Active is where you're actually asked to do something, and they're very easily spoofed, where passive liveness, it happens behind the scenes, so you're not actually asked to do anything. So you're able to check for depth of the face, make sure there's no face masks going on, screens, no injection attacks. So it's a different technology that kind of changed. Again, it's about the fraudsters. So the fraudsters caught on to the how to get around active liveness solutions.
Really?
Yeah.
Even that, like the whole kind of moving around tilting.
Yeah.
Jeez. Because I remember looking at that going, jeez, that's pretty clever. Because, you know, you used to be just like, take a picture of your face.
Yeah, but what you could easily do is if you knew what the process was, and again, they're all
the same every time.
Same time.
Right.
You just get it recorded and you put the screen up to the recording, and a lot of the time, you know, I won't tarnish everyone with the same brush and say everyone will get caught, but they're easily spoofed.
Interesting. Yeah. See, that's the kind of inside baseball I brought you on for.
There you go.
So
are we done?
That's it. End of the pod. Thanks for coming. When you set up in 2016, what was the plan? Like, who are we aiming at?
Yeah, so my background is all kind of financial services. I was a stockbroker at the time. I knew nothing about technology, so a lot of my friends do laugh at me that I've gone into the technology world, but it was very much that world that I was in, and you know, it was heavy financial services, and I was getting fairly browned off with the whole process of identity verification and verifying identity of not just my customers, but if I was setting up my own bank account or dealing with a law firm or anything I was doing. So that's kind of where it came from. So it was very much the financial services firms. That's how I looked at it. But if you look at it today, it's a completely different thing. Now, I will say, you know, 90% of our businesses using us are heavy regulated financial services firms, but you have that 10% softer side. So child minding companies, dog walking companies, selling whiskey. One of them that I love is like the horse trade. So the likes of Goffs and Tattersalls, who are the two big horse dealers in Europe. Mm. Both them need to verify identities and both use us. So
in what sense? Give me the example there.
Well, it's because it's a money, it's a transaction. So you want to make sure who the person is behind the transaction. So over a certain threshold, you gotta prove your identity.
Is that a know your customer thing, or
it
what
would
is
be,
that?
Yeah.
Is that, what is that, over 5K or what is
it? It's different thresholds for different industries, but generally it's around that 10K mark. So again, art dealers, things like this, you know, there's There's some kind of strange ones that you
I never thought of most of these, to be honest. Yeah. So if I'm going to sell a horse for like 50K,
yeah,
I have to use some sort of verification
software. Correct,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have to create an account and then use the system that you're powering in the back end.
Exactly, yeah.
And what does it? How does it work?
So we have a couple of component parts, right? So the whole concept and idea of the business was that, and I'm a big believer of SMEs, I won't get into a different conversation there around the current state of play in Ireland and our reliance on a lot of the larger tech firms.
We're definitely going to go there now. I've got a saddle for that hobby horse. Yeah,
so the idea was kind of create a solution that the large industry would build themselves. So typically large firms want to build it themselves. So we would create and build something that we would be able to sell at a reasonable price to SMEs, mid-tier firms that just didn't have the capacity, the money, the knowledge, the know-how to actually build it. So we built a SaaS configurable solution completely off the shelf. So any business, no matter what size you are, can use our solution. We have, you know, we say we can have you live in 5 minutes with your logo, your colors, your brand, all your business requirements. We can. Truth is, businesses aren't fast enough to move with you, but we've had plenty of scenarios where someone signs up in the morning and they're live that afternoon.
Wow.
Yeah, so
it's one of those things you would assume takes a long time and is quite laborious to
do. And you're basically replacing a manual process literally, you know, out of the box, same day.
How would it used to be done? Like what, you'd have to send in ID and then get it verified, or how did it used to do?
Yeah, so typically you would have to meet someone face-to-face, but if you weren't meeting someone face-to-face, you would drop the documents in, you would post them, you would email them. You know, recently a lot of getting them WhatsApped, you know, things like that. So, like, it's the whole landscape from a compliance point of view, it's kind of comical. It's actually real tick box and stuff.
Right.
So one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we focused on was that it wasn't a tick box exercise, that we went above and beyond and that we were actually checking that this document is real. We're actually making sure that the person is who they say they are. So it gives you, the business, confidence that this is who they say they are.
Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish business who grew from one idea to become world-class companies able to compete with the very best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to becoming more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. And if there's one thing that entrepreneurs want, aside from more money, it's more time. The local enterprise offices want to give that back. Their supports for competitiveness and productivity can help your business save time, money, and energy. For them, it's all in a day's work. So if you want to give your business the gift of time, decreased costs, and lower electricity bills, then go to allinadayswork.ie, take 2 minutes to fill out the form, and let your local enterprise office handle the rest. If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy. You've heard me speak about Mentors Work before, the award-winning free mentoring program for Irish businesses. Well, they have an exciting online event, the E-Commerce Mastery Summit, on Tuesday, June 25th, in partnership with Visa. It's a free event from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m, perfect for business owners, e-commerce pros, and marketing managers. Headlined by Amy Connolly, founder of Sculpt by Amy, who'll be sharing insights on how to boost your digital sales and expand your online reach. Register your place now at mentorsworklive.ie or click the link in the podcast description. This sounds kind of complicated.
It is. Like, again, if you use the service, it might take you 30 seconds, 60 seconds. And I think the day that I kind of realized that we're actually really onto something was when my first buddy texts me and says, just use IDPal. It's pretty cool. Only took me 20 seconds. And I thought that was like, wow, okay. He's not, you know, he lives in Waterford and whatever else. So, and then you kind of go, yeah, it was pretty easy, but actually behind the scenes and the years of building and the technology and
that's what I'm saying. Like, it
else,
sounds like a tough business to build.
It's
like,
very
it's not
complex,
one of those kind of businesses you go, I can see how you do that. Like,
yeah.
your years as a stockbroker, you'd seen kind of how complicated it was, how much work was involved.
Yeah, and it wasn't even as a stockbroker; it was just every job I was ever in, you know. And you know, I talked to buddies, and everyone's just giving out about it and talking about it. I was just like, all right, what do I do?
But what was the point? Because I'm always curious about that point from zero to one, whereby people are like, I'm going to solve that problem. What was that point for you?
So I told this story a couple of months ago, where basically it was the idea with a stockbroker is they transfer you money, you invest their money, and you make a percentage commission from that trade. So very simple business, obviously. And if the money is sitting in the account and their identity isn't verified, you can't use that money to invest in stock. So I can't make commission. So it was always that pressure to get people to verify their identities right. Very, very quickly. So you'd be on the phone and you'd be asking people to kind of, you know, can I go to your house? I'll drive down to Cork to you, you know, because it was worth your while. So it was a random, like, horrible, wet, I think it was October, November morning, and this lady walked into the office and I got a call from reception to say, you know, this person is waiting for you. So I went out and she was drenched wet and miserable, and she'd left her house early to come into the office to give me her documents. And then I took the documents and I went and I photocopied them. And I remember sitting at the front of the office, and it was kind of a big, huge, long office, and I was photocopying the documents. I was like, this is wrong. This just doesn't make sense. And I went back to her, set up the account. But I kind of went, like, that person had to leave her house early. She's soaked. Mm-hmm. The process from a compliance point of view, I didn't know if it was a real document or fake document. I photocopied it. I gave it to the compliance team. I gave it to the onboarding team. So her documentation had gone everywhere. And I went, okay, that's just horrible. Mm. So what I did was I actually started Googling to see, is there anything I could suggest to the business? And I couldn't find anything. So then I kind of got a little bit excited about it and started telling everyone that this is what I was excited about. And it's not a very sexy, cool business.
I was just going to say, I'd say most people are like, great.
Yeah, yeah. Anti-money laundering. Yeah, KYC. Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Cool.
Yeah,
yeah. Documents. Mm.
Yeah, so people were like, it's kind of funny. What I did to a lot of people was, what I said to them was, these are three things that I need. Come back to me by Friday. And guaranteed, no one ever came back to you by Friday. So you knew they weren't the right person. So it was until the people that I was talking to actually came back and was like, oh, and they were as excited about this as I was. And within kind of 4 months, 4 or 5 months, there was three of us involved.
How? Like, what were you looking for? Like,
what were you looking for?
What were you looking for? Were you looking for co-founders, for technical people?
Oh, yeah, 100%. What were you doing? Like, I knew my strengths, but I also knew my weaknesses, right? And I said at the start, I'm not into technology. I'm not a technological genius. So I was going to be building a tech company. That was the concept and idea. The minutes from our very first meeting are blown up and hung in our boardroom, which I love. And the beautiful thing about that is, I know on this podcast, everyone talks about pivots. I love the fact that we've never, ever, ever, ever had to pivot in our lives. So actually what's in the boardroom is actually what we have today. So
that's rare.
Yeah, it's cool. Super rare. Cool. Yeah. So
this is always something I'm always trying to like give as much practical advice to people as not advice, but practical stories as possible to people so they can kind of get on the journey themselves. What did you do to find these people? Because people always struggle to go, I can't find a co-founder. How did you find these people?
I talked to everyone I could. And I think a lot of the times you hear people saying, oh, you got a great idea. Don't tell people, they'll steal it.
It's like
99.99999% of people will not do anything, right?
They don't care. So, yeah. And I mean that in the best way possible. They don't care about you. Yeah. They don't care about your stupid idea. They don't care about you. They don't want to hear about you. They're like, cool.
100%.
Anyway, let me tell you about the match last night.
Out the back door, yeah. No, the kind of the great moment was I was a wedding. I was at a wedding. I was a groomsman.
Such an Irish story.
Oh, it's totally like, you know, having pints, there you go. And the guy that was sitting beside me was also a groomsman for the same guy. Clearly, and we'd never met each other before, and I started telling him what I was doing, and weirdly he got a bit excited about it. He was living abroad at the time, and he says, yeah, he was thinking about coming home, and just the way he was talking, I knew that he had totally different traits and experience to what I had. So he decided, right, I'll pack in my job And he moved back to Ireland, and away we went.
That's bonkers.
So that's bonkers, yeah. But the,
how did you know he's the right person?
Just by talking to him. Just genuinely, like, you know, just the way he was. Now, I will say, for his sins, and I always slag him about this, he was a consultant back in the day. So he had a way and means of putting things together that I just didn't have that expertise, right? So we very much complemented each other in that way. And that's what it was as well. It was about complimenting. Like, I didn't want a same me.
Yeah.
So it was about complimenting each other. But I think all the co-founders of the business stories are kind of cool. Like the Rob O'Farrell is our, so that was a guy, James O'Toole. He'd kill me if I didn't mention his name.
I was gonna say, yeah. Give him some shine.
So James now lives in New York, set up there 12-14 months ago. But Rob O'Farrell is our CTO. And everyone kind of goes, where did you get Rob from? And I think Rob is a very, very special person. He's a genius in his own right. But I put into LinkedIn, you'll enjoy this, I put into LinkedIn CTO search, and around 300 names come up, and I pinged every one of them.
I had
around 30 responses.
What did you say?
Oh, it was just, I can't even remember exactly what I said, but it was, you know, hi, my name is Cullum. I'm setting up this business, you know, blah, 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 blah. We're looking for people with your expertise. I've no money. It was something along those lines. So I had around 30 people that responded out of the 300.
Not a bad hit rate, to be fair.
No, it was actually okay. Yeah. Out of those 30, then I went forward and kind of met with 8 or 10 of them. Every one of them that I met, I spent maybe 20 minutes, half an hour with. And with Rob, I met him and we spent 3 or 4 hours together, right? So it did take a while to get Rob. He was involved in something else. And then when that finished, we hooked up maybe 6 months later and he came on board. So that was quite cool. And
is it a hard sell? Because technical people are so rare. Great technical people.
I don't think it was a hard sell to him because his mindset. So he's not just a techie, he's also business.
Right.
So I think he has that kind of unique kind of mindset. I think for the right person, it's not a hard sell, but it's about finding the right person, you know? And then we met, like, so I was kind of, I was CEO of the business and needed a COO. And he was the next big hire. Now, granted, that was kind of 3 years ago. So we were maybe, I think he was the 11th person in. But we were at a function again. More alcohol involved, and there was maybe 10 or 12 people. So we had the COO role out in the market. We had maybe 100 people apply for the job, which blew my mind. Interviewed loads of people, and I was really, really struggling. I had a kind of shortlisted 3 people, but wasn't overly happy with all 3. And then just randomly at this event, and a group of people in a circle talking, and Simon Montgomery was the guy, and he was just chatting. And I just turned around to one of our guys and I went, he's our COO, and chased him and got him. So that was that. So it was all kind of like, you know, different stories for all the lads in that regard.
I love hearing that because people really struggle with that part.
Yeah.
And I think they're afraid to put themselves out there. I think that's the honest answer, is that they're afraid to, what you said there is that they're afraid to tell people.
Yeah.
Then they're afraid to pursue.
Yeah.
And then they're afraid to have uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah, no, 100%. And we actually, one of the things we love doing is putting memories up around the office. So after I met Rob that time, he put up on his LinkedIn about this cool little Irish startup that was looking to take on a CTO, and if anyone knew anyone. So we have his post up on our wall. But yeah, he ended up to be the CTO.
Stay humble, Rob.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So 3 of you got together. How long... time span are we talking here? How long are you putting this together? Because that's important to know.
It'd be unjust to me also to mention. So we also had Shelley McKinney, who she's now McKinney, she was Masdorp. We were going to actually move the business to Amsterdam at one stage. So we won a startup lab thing in Amsterdam, startup bootcamp. There was 300 companies applied. We got ranked number 1 and we were about to move everything over.
Were you doing the startup scene hard at that stage?
Pitching
everywhere, going every meetup?
Yeah, yeah, and you were getting knocked down by everyone, do you know what I mean? Right. Like, everyone's knocking you down, and there was different reasons you were knocked down, but Shelley was living in Amsterdam at the time, so it was kind of perfect in that regard.
And you were going to move lock, stock and barrel?
Yeah.
Bang.
Yeah.
Why?
Everything. Because we had this opportunity with this startup boot camp. They were giving us free office space. They were introducing us to all their network. They were blah, 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 all that kind of great stuff. And we kind of, why not? You know, why not? Right. We were, none of us were tied down at that time. So obviously very different to now. But so Shelley then ended up, when we decided not to move, she worked remotely. So 2016, 2017, ahead of our times, we had a remote CMO. And then Shelley, and I think it was 2018, 19, moved over to Ireland. To join the business, so
right,
that was quite cool as well. Yeah, so but sorry, the timelines. Yeah, 2016 to 2018, probably 2.5 years, 2.5-3 years doing all that, building all that.
How were you funding this?
Angel investors, very much so. I think we were, some people call it lucky, some people call it unlucky. We never had a big ball of cash where we did these big investment rounds. Mm. And even, sorry, when I'm talking about a startup, I'm talking about like, you know, an investment round of $500,000. We never even did like $500,000 investment rounds. We were getting drips and drabs of 100 grand here, 150 grand here. And
was that deliberate, accidental, cause of, because you couldn't? Why was that?
I don't think it was deliberate either, but like we were learning on the fly. You know, I'd never raised money for a company before. None of the rest of the guys had ever raised money, so we were trying to figure everything out. I do think it's a blessing in disguise, because we were so frugal. Like, we were crazy frugal. You know, like we got our first 50 grand came from Enterprise Ireland. And I will always be forever grateful for that 50 grand. And again, they took a percentage of the business. And now some people kind of go, oh, that's... And I go, no. We got 50,000 from Enterprise Ireland for a PowerPoint slide. You know, that's what it was.
And once they're on the team as well, it's a
it's good.
Different kettle of fish. Yeah, yeah. You've people with skin in the game then. Yeah.
We ripped that PowerPoint slide up, actually, and it's framed in individual frames the whole way up the staircase in the office.
I'm going to have to see this office, man. You're selling this to me hard. Like, I feel like I'm going into like some Willy Wonka's Disney. But it is.
It's
kind of
cool
museum.
having all those memories, you know?
I think they're important, though, because so many offices you go into, they're all a bit generic. They're a bit sterile. Yeah. You could be in any of them, you know, any of the big boys, Meta, LinkedIn, like they all look the same. And then there's a Googleification of all startup offices thing, because everyone tries to be like the big ones. You're like, oh, this is generic, like.
Yeah, no, we just do us. That's what we try and do, and it's the same with everything. But the EI money came in, and it was 50 grand, and myself and James always laugh. At the time, we spent 49,800 on the product, and then we did one trip to the UK. Myself, we brought our suits over because we thought that's what we should be
doing.
That's
what business
people
do.
Now I can wear shorts.
So that's how you know you've met it.
Yeah.
If someone rocks in here in shorts, I'm like, this lad has met it.
I wouldn't say that. I just misjudged the weather this morning a little. And then it was too late. But we shared a 12-bed dorm in a hostel.
Oh, proper startup.
And it's not as if the two of us were skint or anything. We were just both after leaving jobs, you know. But we knew that... that we needed to make all this money work.
And you respect it. I think I have a huge respect for people who do that, because you respect the money.
So
you can always tell people who've had like a lot of money injected into the business, because the red flag number one for me is that if a company has loads of swag before there's many customers.
That's
my number one bullshit o-meter.
In 2017 when we were younger, I saw someone, they'll probably know who I'm talking about when I say it, but they had beer bottles with their name on it. And I went... What? How? You know?
Why?
It's just, yeah.
Just that's ego. But anyway.
Yeah. So anyways, we stayed in this hostel for 2 nights, and we had our suits, and we walked around the city meeting different people and whatnot.
They definitely thought you were fraudsters. Yeah. There's two lads in 6B. Yeah. Definitely con artists. They're staying in a hostel wearing suits.
Yeah. So people saying, oh, so where are you staying? You go, oh, I don't really know London that well.
That district.
Yeah.
Financial district.
Yeah. So we always laugh at that. And there's another guy who, myself and James, we always shared a room. So again, to try and be frugal, right? And somebody said to me, this is maybe 2019. We met them over in London at another event, and they said, are you guys still sharing a room? We go, yeah, we are. And they go, all right. He says, why'd you ask that? And he says, I'll know you've met it when you have different rooms.
Yeah. You know, so you're splashed out. I was in London in January, and I was looking at all them options. I was like, Tess, London's expensive. Then it was like a no window option. I was like,
yeah.
Click. I can go walk outside the door if I want some fresh air. And I was fine. Yeah. I didn't care. I never even saw there's a no window option anywhere, but I was like, it didn't bother me.
You'll take it.
Cheap. So then when did you launch the first version of the product? So 2016, you start cooking it up. When was the first kind of like, okay, it's live?
The end of 2017, we had our very first version. And I always kind of laugh how we actually got someone to pay for it, because our platform originally was a mobile app. We also have a web journey now, but it was originally a mobile app. So we went heavy on mobile. Or on apps, and we only had iPhone. We had no Android, so it meant half your customers couldn't use us. But I think it was very novel at the time, so people bought into it. So we got a handful of customers, and we still have a couple of customers on legacy accounts that we have never increased their fees. And our plan is to never increase their fees and just leave them at that, because they were the first customers to pay us, you know. So those kind of first 8-10 people.
And what were you selling them? You were selling the version?
We were selling them the mobile app that allowed their end users verify their identity through documents, databases and biometrics.
Okay.
And then a piece of a platform that the business could log into, that they could review the documentation from obviously their office or wherever they were.
And did this sit within their customer journey, or was this an app that they would have to download your app?
So they would download our app, but okay, it would be their logo, their color palette, their look, their feel. Right. So it's all fully branded.
Right.
So there's kind of two versions. There's the branded version, and then there's the completely white label. So you could go into the app store, and there's multiple companies there that, company name verify, and it's actually just it's us behind the scenes, but it's completely theirs.
And is this how it still works now, that you download a separate app to verify?
Yeah, or you could use the web version. Or if you have your own mobile app, you could embed our app into their app. So and there's different countries have different kind of expectations or wants. So definitely in the US, everyone wants the web journey. They think that downloading an app will create customer drop off. That's a real funny one for me, because most people think that downloading an app is going to create friction. It doesn't. Like, our stats say that is not the case.
Interesting. Because I would have thought that intuitively.
Yeah,
it's
not. I
would have went with the American idea.
So statistically, everyone has roughly 90 apps on their phone. We spent 90% of our time on mobile apps. Why do we do that? Because they're better. They're quicker, they're faster, they're slicker, they're cooler, and that's just natural. And if you look at your own phone, you can do this later on tonight, you look at your own phone and check out how many apps you have not gone back into in the last 12 months, and I guarantee you'll do a nice clear down of your...
I did an offboarding thing recently.
Yeah.
And I was like, they were like, oh, we can offboard like something you haven't used in 6 months. I was just curious. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And then I went back and I was like, damn, there's a lot of apps on that phone. It was just Trainline UK. Yeah. I downloaded it twice for Manchester.
Yeah.
And that's it. It just stayed there.
There's a reason I use an iPhone, but there's a reason iPhone have the search feature for your apps. Mm. It's because we've so many apps.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's one of those things I always kind of laugh at, that people think that like downloading an app is really a real friction. You know, it takes like 7 seconds. Mm. It's a button, and like, you know, it's easy.
So talk to me about the first couple of customers, because that's always a landmark journey for companies as well.
Yeah.
How'd you get them?
Door to door. Like, it was real kind of knocking on doors. It was very hard graft. They weren't a customer at the time, but they kind of brought us in. They brought us in and helped us a lot, right? And I always mention them and name check them. So Fexco, who are down in Cloraglen, they got their staff involved. They brought us down to Cloraglen. We got to meet all their staff. They helped us kind of develop the product in a way. And I think a lot of the companies that were involved in the early days, especially the actual customers, they knew we were trying to build something, right? We never told them that this is the finished product, and we were ultra, like, just about the customer, you know? We would have been, you know, we'd do anything for them. And that's kind of
were you very transparent with them going, look?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You couldn't. There was no point in trying to be any other way, because, you know, it was full of bugs. It was full of issues. It was functionality wise, it could only do 5% of what it can do today. So, you know, I think the people that were the starting customers, they're the kind of the innovative mindset type person who was like going, oh, I like this. This is cool. I'll give this a try. Mm. You know, how much is it? Yeah, that's okay. That's not too bad. You know, it was ridiculously cheap at the time, you know, compared to where we are now. But you were trying to get into bed with them and doing everything for them, and you were learning, and it was iteration after iteration. It was good. Like, and it kind of went 10 customers, 20 customers, 40 customers. We've been around 400 now, customers using us. So we'd have, you know, we would have, I'd say 80% of our customer base will be what we call SME mid-tiers. And then 20% would be that kind of big enterprise. And then we'd have a number of businesses who would be resellers. So they would have customers, you know, that we actually don't see or have any dealings with, and they've resold on our behalf. So they're the kind of our three channels to market.
Really quick break to thank today's sponsor. If you've been inspired by listening to The Amazing Business Person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the Local Enterprise Office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get the idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out your local enterprise office on localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business today. Now, back to the episode.
And you do grew literally door to door, one customer leading to the next and the next to the next. Is that how it went?
Yeah. Yeah.
And at what stage did you start to ramp up the team? Because that sounds like the three of you got it to a certain point, four or five you joined then.
Everyone was selling. Yeah. there was no point in being there unless you were selling.
And what worked is in what, when you say door to door, do you mean physically? Do you mean conferences? How do you mean?
Some of them were actually, you know, a little law firm, you know, how are you doing? My name is Cullum. Some of them were definitely going around to conferences. There was, you know, email campaigns, you know, going onto websites, you know, going onto the website ourselves physically and finding what that email is and pinging the emails out. You know, you're probably getting better hit rates on that kind of stuff than you would be now. I think the whole email world is gone. You know, it's you don't get any response from emails anymore. You know, this is like the mass email that you go out where you ping out the same thing to 1,000 people. No one opens them up anymore, you know.
Yeah.
We're back in 2016, 17. People were still responding. That was like, it was exciting. I remember when we got our first customer. So I'll say they were €24 a month. That's what they were. And we went down to O'Donoghue's on Baggot Street.
But the first month's takings behind the bar. Yeah. We're having 3 pints left.
We actually spent our own money. We didn't use the €24. We spent our own money and we had a couple of pints of Guinness, and that was an immense feat.
It's the best €24 in the world.
Like, it's class. It was just class. Yeah. It was kind of, yeah. Somebody's actually bought this. This is mad. You know, there's something.
How long were you in business? How long were you operating at that stage?
It would have been the end of, so we were 20 months maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So coming up on 2 years.
Yeah, but before that, there was 6 months before we incorporated the business. So we were incorporated March 8th, 2016. So there was 6 months of kind of work and effort before that. So it would have been 2 years. Yeah.
See, this is the bit I love chatting about, because this is the bit people don't see.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the bit people only see, like,
the overnight success.
Yeah, they see now. They see you in shorts thinking you're the man, right? Yeah. But they don't see the quiet years whereby you're in the dark, no one knows about you, no revenue, but you're grafting.
Yeah,
you're doing the hardest graft you'll ever do, because it's just, you have nothing. You have no product, no routine.
But you're loving it. Like, it's,
yeah, but it's the most exciting time.
It's so enjoyable. So enjoyable. I wouldn't do it again, but it's so enjoyable.
It's great to think about and remember.
Yeah.
And hang up cool mementos. Yeah. I wouldn't do it again. Well, I think everyone says that. Every entrepreneur says that. God, if I knew what I knew then.
But it is. It's totally that.
Entrepreneurs are degenerates, though. They would. They yeah. would, you would, I would. Like, you just, you get that bug again. You're like, oh, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe I could do it again. We'll see. Maybe there's another, maybe there's something else. So 2 years in, first couple of customers, was that the point where you're like, okay, this is going to work?
Yeah, I think like, so when we were selling to the original customers, we had no competition because it was just in Ireland. And it was just, do you want this product or not? And it was a very, very simple decision. Most of them were not, right? But it was very, very easy. We got involved in, and I think this is definitely something, if I was telling, you know, young startups to kind of avoid, we got involved in some large enterprise deals. We just not, where we were not ready, you know? And when you're kind of two and a half years in, you're chasing, right? And you're trying to do everything you can to please them. Your belief is that if you land that enterprise deal, that is going to change everything. But then you'll have a customer concentration issue of 90% of your revenue is coming from one customer and they're basically controlling you. So
it sounds counterintuitive, but it's probably the best advice. I heard this on a pod at the weekend. I was listening to the guy who used to be Peter Thiel's right-hand man, and they're asking, you know, you've been at the right hand of one of the most successful people in the world in terms of investing in entrepreneurship. What's the couple of things? And that was it. It's like, learn how to say no to things, and specifically things like that.
Yeah, and still today, we're like, there's RFPs that come in. There's one of our rules is we don't go after banks. So that's my rule. Now, if a bank comes to us, and we have a few banks using us, but if they come to us, that's a different story because they're interested in you. But we would not really go after banks.
Why not?
They suck the life out of you.
Too long. Say what you really think.
Yeah. too long a process. Yeah. And not to be too critical, but they always make the wrong decision. How does that come across?
It's perfect. That's the clip we needed. Now we can end the pod.
What I mean by that is that they all make the wrong decision. So how they look at product is on an Excel sheet. And it just blows my mind that that's how they assess something. And we're a big believer of like, test our product and test the other product, because I'm very, very confident you're going to go with our product.
Right? It also seems kind of logical. Try it, taste it, see what it feels like.
But they don't. They don't. So you go through this big, huge, long process for 6 months, iteration after iteration of presentation after presentation. And one of the problems that we definitely found in our early days was we told the truth. And now we realize that if you're in an RFP, most of the stuff that's actually been said in RFPs, I won't say most of the stuff, that's probably too harsh, right? But there's a lot of lies that are told in RFPs just to get you to that next phase, right? And that's what's happening. So, so like when a bank finally makes the decision, they've never actually tested the product.
That's wild.
Right?
You'd think in this day and age things have moved on. Is that bureaucracy? Is that old school mentality? What is it?
This is in our world, right? So I can't comment on everything that the bank does, but in our world, definitely, like, it blows my mind again that that's kind of what happens. But by the time that they implement that product that they've decided on, they're 2 years down the line, right?
The world's changed.
In our world, it's completely different. So this idea of what I talked about, active liveness and passive liveness, they will implement probably a passive liveness solution that now you need passive plus because the fraudsters have caught up. So that's why they're always behind the scenes. So if you think about like a neobank, neobanks move and they're fast, you know, and they stay ahead of the game. And that's why they're always going to be out in front. That's my thoughts on banks.
That's all I got to say about that. Thank you. Look, it's wild. Jesus Christ, you should buy something for 19 quid online.
Yeah.
It's like reprogramming the space shuttle. Swipe here. Oh, it didn't go through that time. Redo the transaction. Yeah. The amount of times you really have to want to buy something now to like go through the online transaction.
Yeah.
It's mental. It drives me. I just don't understand it in today's day and age. You can just go to Revolut or one of those. Done.
Bank, done.
Got, see ya. I think below, like, again, a hobby horse, below a 200 euro threshold, stop asking me to swipe and log in and then get the authentication.
Yeah, there's definitely certain things there. Like, sorry, there's good reasons that you have to do the 2FA and everything else.
But it has to be killing e-commerce. Has to be, because I find it's such a friction that you're like, I'm buying something for 20 quid.
Yeah.
This is driving me insane. I'd say the amount of drop-off in customers must be astronomical. Yeah. Talk to me about fraudsters, because we mentioned this a couple of times.
What do you want to know about them?
Everything. Give me some sexy stories about fraud. Like, because it has, like,
yeah,
it's like, it's the number one topic at the minute in terms of, like, all you're seeing online is fraudsters did this. The currency, did an article up yesterday. I love the currency.
Yeah.
Did an article yesterday about Chinese.
Tom Lyons was great to us, and I'm not related.
Tom Lyons is great. Big fan of him. He's a beautiful writer. Yeah. Really nice guy.
He put out some stuff on us in our early days when we were a non-event. And I'd be always thankful to him for that kind of support as well. But fraudsters, like, we rely on our customers to tell us about fraud cases. So we are unique in our space in that we don't have access to our customers' data.
Hmm.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
So if you verify your identity with a company tomorrow, if you're using our software, we have no access to that data, right? So if they catch a fraudster, there was a cool case 2 years ago where there was a gang of fraudsters caught through our system, and the company got in touch with us, and they were all very excited about it. We got equally excited because, but we rely on those businesses to tell us about situations where they caught fraud. Behind the scenes, the technology is doing a totally different thing. But then you're looking for what those trends are. So information that we would have access to would be certain types of security features or certain types of changes that are made with documents, or an increase in documents from a particular country, things like that. So we've access to that information, but it can never be brought back to an individual.
Right.
So that's the kind of data that we have access to. Where what's actually happening, and the truth about what's happening in our space is, a lot of times when you go through a verification process, your data actually gets sent to a third country. The large majority of them are India or Pakistan. You have a manual person verifying your identity there. It's not using technology. And if you ever go through that journey and you get a message, say, we'll let you know in 10 minutes, or, you know, you can open up an account in 5 minutes, we'll let you know in 24 hours there's a problem with your document. The reason all that's happening is because they're in a queue, right? And it's manual people. Where we are 100% tech driven. I get the buzzword AI because it has to be brought in. So that allows us then not to have access to the data, which is a huge selling point for anyone that's in compliance. They go, oh, we've just dramatically reduced the risk there in someone not having access to our customers' data. I think in the next couple of years, there is going to be a big blow up in our space. I've said this at board meetings as well. I just think it doesn't make sense. You know,
what do you mean?
The amount of data that's accessible to other companies that are using equivalent identity verification providers.
So this data has been transferred on a couple of times.
Yeah, multiple and hands, there's manual multiple people eyes. Looking at that data, and what are they doing with it? Who are they? You know, so if you think about the risks that are involved there, and you not knowing who has access to your data, it's crazy. You know, so
outsourcing is great, but if it's cheap, it's cheap for a reason.
Yeah.
You're paying. I had a chat with someone earlier. You're paying in a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
You're paying in terms of increasing risk exposure. You're paying in terms of maybe opening yourself up, not now, but down the road for potential problems. There's always a cost, and there's this rush towards cheapness. There's this rush towards, like, especially bigger institutions like banks, cost cutting.
Yeah, yeah.
Costs.
I will say in our industry, though, it's kind of like we're all kind of roughly the same price. There's nobody really kind of going, oh, they're the kind of like the Ryanair of the identity verification. We're all kind of roughly the same price, which again is fine. You know, there's certain variances, but it's just I think what's happening in our space because it's the older school companies, because they're using people behind the scenes to manually verify it. I think just it's a bad user experience. You don't have to wait 10 minutes or 20
people's
hours.
Patience is so low now. Yeah. People want, are so you want instant, on demand. Instant, people are, like, yeah. If you have to wait 10 minutes, it feels like 10 years.
Yeah.
The next day, people are gone.
Yeah,
they're just exactly. Like, oh, I won't bother. Just drop out the funnel. Like, it's wild. Is fraud seems to be just so prevalent right now? Is this because we just hear more about it, or is fraud a huge growing issue?
We definitely hear more about it, but it's definitely a growing issue. Yeah, definitely. Like in our space, so AI generated documents. I was given a guest lecturer at the PAT Institute, I'll call them. And basically I just showed them a platform where you can get any card, ID card, passport, driver's license, national ID that you want, put in whatever information you want, it'll cost you fiver, and you can have it in around 2 minutes.
No way.
And it's going to trick most systems.
So it gives you a digital version.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. So if you look at what's happening, so you've all these companies. So where's the fraudster going to go first? The fraudster is going to go to the place of least friction. So they will go to the place where you're allowed to upload your ID. So if you're allowed to upload your ID, what that means is that you can't tell if that was actually a genuine picture of an ID or not. Mm. So if you go to our platform, if you're using our service, you have to take a picture of a genuine ID, right?
In the moment. Okay, yeah.
If you take a picture of a photocopy, right, we can recognize that it's a photocopy. We will let that through, but the business knows it's a photocopy. So they know that you're a fraudster or potentially a fraudster.
It'll flag it to go.
Yeah, it's, you know, not caution. Everyone's a fraudster because it's a photocopy. You know, you might be trying to do a deal and you're away on holidays or away at work and someone else's. But that's the kind of stuff that you're dealing with. So you have these IDs that can be created for next to nothing.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And the scary thing is that couple of years ago, you needed to be a really good fraudster. Right now, this is available to anyone, you know?
Well, it used to be this thing, you know, the dark web, and it used to be like, you know, these gangs that would like, whereas now it's just anybody.
And I like, there's a lot of identity documents, real, genuine identity documents for sale on the dark web.
Mm.
I have my own theories on where they're coming from that I won't get into, but
what a tease.
It's, there you go. Maybe season 542.
You're going to come back on and do a tell-all. It's wild. Like, I mean, the online world at the minute just feels crazy. Like, it's accelerating at such a pace.
It is scary. Yeah, it is scary in a way. But again, the right technology, you'll be in a good place. I'm sorry, that's not a plug for us, but like, you need loads of different things.
Well, it's like insurance, right? You don't wait to get insurance when your house burns down.
Yeah.
You know, these are the kind of all these things. If you are going to do business in the online world, which is everybody now, I don't think there's anybody who should be an offline business anymore. These are the extra steps
that you need to do. Yeah.
Because customers have changed, right? Customers' preferences, especially after COVID. It's a good thing in a way because people are so used to digital now.
Yeah, yeah.
They're used to doing things online, whereas things before, I'll bring everything into the bank and the bank manager will look after me. Whereas now people are like, no, it's fine. I can just do it on my phone. It's great. It's easier. It's handy. So like, it's good things. We just have to be more conscious of like, what are the knock-on effects?
Yeah. You don't want to make it too easy.
So what's the plan for ID Pal? Like, where do you want to bring this?
So we were successful in Ireland. Around two and a half years ago, we launched in the UK. So we've a decent sized sales unit in the UK, and around four, so that's our biggest revenue earner. It's 40% of our revenue comes from the UK. We're only down to around 30% Irish now. So as time goes on, it's going to be less and less in Ireland. The US, we opened up an office in the US to, March last year. That was a super week. I was over there for the kind of the launch party. We did it over St. Patrick's. On the Monday, we got in to do the ringing of the bell at the New York Stock Exchange.
Class.
Which was quite cool. So that was like our opening pick of...
That's a bucket we've launched. Right,
so it was cool. It got a great reaction as well on LinkedIn and stuff like that. But the US is the big press now for us. We think there's a huge opportunity in the US for us. And how we decided on the US was naturally the revenue started coming from the US. So where we'll decide on where our next country is based off where revenue is coming from. And I kind of look at it as though, you know, once you kind of get to that, you know, somewhere between 5% to 10% of your revenue coming from a particular country, you definitely have product market fit. There's something going on there that there's a real interest. So then that's when we start really looking at that market. So who knows where it'll be, but definitely that's how I look at it. That's why the natural, I think a lot of people kind of go, oh, you know, Ireland, UK, US, yeah, that's typical, but that's just where the revenue came from.
And that's what you're logical.
Following. You're following where your customers are.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we're in a place where Italy starts going to 5-7%, we'll start properly looking at the Italian market and go, right, we need bodies on the ground there.
That's a cost, right? There's a huge cost to ramping up in any of these countries, especially if they're non-English speaking.
Yeah.
That's a whole different ballgame. You said something earlier, and I kind of want to loop back on that before we go into the quickfire round. Ireland's over-reliance on multinationals.
Did I say it?
You said it. It's a safe space. No one's listening.
Yeah, I just think like, so if you look at the types of startups around now, right? It's really, really hard to get staff, okay? And you are competing against these companies who are paying overly inflated wages. They're giving you breakfast and all these different benefits.
The whole shebang,
right? You can't do that, right? So there's only a subset of those people that will ever kind of come to a startup. If you look at our business, right, our largest customer is less than 5% of our revenue, okay? Which means that if we lost our largest customer, we're fine. Okay. I don't want to lose our largest customer, but we're fine.
It's a bad quarter, maybe a bad half year, but it's not the end.
Yeah, exactly. So if you look at any country and you go how the country's been run, and if you run the country like you should be running a business, you're in a scenario there where is your over-reliance? Okay. And I just think we've a huge over-reliance on these large corporates. So if tomorrow it was announced that LinkedIn or Google or Meta was pulling out of Ireland, there would be emergency meetings happening. That's what would happen. So you saw everything when the likes of X announced the redundancies. You saw what happened there and all the meetings that were happening about redundancies. So if you had a scenario where those thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs were gone tomorrow, and you could potentially have a knock-on effect as well.
Effect would be cataclysmic.
Where are we? You know, so I don't think we focus enough on homegrown. I don't think we focus enough on, you know, and what you want is small businesses become big, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But if you look at like the likes of say Transformate or Finergo, or these guys, right? They're homegrown. They ain't going nowhere, right? And that's super. And like the thousands of staff that they have, right? So that sets your stall. Like, there's no way anyone's having a conversation about either of those two companies and worried that they're going to be moving their operations, right? Mm. Because they're Irish and that's where they're staying, right? So I think if we were doing more of that, you would be in a far stronger place and you would have less reliance. That's what I kind of mean.
And I agree with you. And I asked you the question because I've thought about this quite a lot. And I've chatted to a lot of really great entrepreneurs about this because it is something I do think about, because I think after COVID, if you haven't learned now not to be surprised, then you've missed the lesson, because anything can happen at any time. I had an unbelievably good conversation with Stephen Kinsella, Professor Stephen Kinsella down UL a few weeks ago. And we kind of did like a couple of hypotheticals. You know, what could cause like a mad reaction? He's like, well, what could cause a mad reaction is Trump decides in the morning, all US tech firms have to come home or they lose XYZ.
Yeah, yeah. It's huge.
And I was like, keep going. And he played it out. He goes, let's say Google, Meta, LinkedIn, Salesforce pulls out of Dublin. The whole quarter is gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Grand Canal is over. It's finished.
You're in serious trouble.
You're losing 100,000 jobs. And I mean, 100,000 jobs that are paid exceptionally well. And the butterfly effect of that, of knocking out, is cataclysmic.
Yep.
That makes the Celtic Tiger look like if I presented
an investor deck based off all this that you're just after talking about, he wouldn't get funded. Mm. And that's the reality.
And I think we don't like to talk about it because it's great. What the idea have done is unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. And you got to work with what you have. But I also think, there's a lot of bullshittery around the Irish startup scene. I think we like to...
yeah.
do a lot of jazz hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Without kind of actually, oh, I saw this nonsense about like they're going to build a new accelerator. I'm like, incentives.
Yeah, yeah.
Incentivize entrepreneurs. Stop giving them like entrepreneur crash.
Yeah.
Give them incentives. Get out of their way. Show me your incentives. I'll show you their outcome. That's the Munger Buffett quote. That is the most true thing yeah. in business in the world. You stop giving people $2,000 and just incentivize them to build, to grow, and to stay.
Yeah, I have another view. That's in line with that. I won't go into it now either. But
God, we're going to have to do a whopper episode in a couple of years.
I've told some people about it, I've told a good few people about it, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, that's I really like that." But it's around the startup scene. It'd be a beast to kind of get off the ground as well.
We're wrapping in like 8 minutes, so I'm going to get that out of you off camera. And then don't worry, I'm going to bring it back on in 2 years and we'll get all the juice out of
it
then.
Fine.
So we're going to move into our rapid fire round. But before you do that, where can people learn more about yourself and learn more about IDPal?
Yeah, LinkedIn will be my main space. So it's just Colum Lyons, Colum Lyons, Lyons. And the website is www.id-pal.com.
Who are the main types of people that they're listening going, yeah, that's for me, but I'm not sure if it is. Who are the main types of customers should be coming to you?
Anyone in the financial services industry. And to be honest, like, not to say anyone that's doing anything, but identity verification, if you're not doing it because it's a regulatory requirement, you're probably going to have to do it to protect your business from fraud. That's the reality. So that's one of our problems, is the scope is just huge.
Good problem to have.
It is, yeah.
Quick fire round.
Yeah.
What book could you recommend every entrepreneur read?
Would you be surprised if I said I don't read books?
That's absolutely fine. That's not the wrong answer. Get out.
I've read.
You're scrapping this episode and never go live.
I've read 3 books in my life. Yeah.
Okay.
3 books. So,
Anne and Barry, or what are we talking here?
If you discount, like, you know, you're leaving certain things like that, and they're 3 very random books. The first book that I ever read was actually Richard Branson, Losing My Virginity.
Best book I've ever read.
Second book was around unsolved crimes in Ireland. And the third book was a fictional book about a basketball player in Italy. So there you go. That's my history of books. But what I will say is we buy books for our staff.
Irony of this.
I know. Yeah. But everyone else reads, so that's fine. So I think there's Atomic Habits that's constantly mentioned, I think.
Yeah.
And then Eat the Frog.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's an old one, but a good one.
They're the last 2 books that we bought for...
They're the books that people tell me are good.
Yeah.
What's something you had to learn the hard way?
Learn the hard way. Probably 2 things, I'd say. The first would be never believe what you're told or what you read, right? I think there's an awful lot of BS and an awful lot of like, and that's everywhere, right? And that's even like in the papers and everything. It's just like you just read it and you kind of firm up an opinion. The other thing would be, what was the question?
What's something you had to learn the hard way?
Definitely like fast money. I used to be the stockbroker. I used to be the trader. I used to like, that's when I was a kid, or you know, in my early 20s, was all about the quick book. The slow grind is better. You know, you can't make money fast, right? Look, there's obviously exceptions to the rule, but you know, it's just, you need to work at stuff and you need to spend a lot of time on it. So, you know, we're 8 years in business now and we're in a good place now. But just that'd be definitely, you know, it took me probably 15 years to realize that, not chase the quick book.
What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
I wouldn't necessarily say I've sacrificed anything. It's just been honest. Like, I've loved every single minute of what I do. So there's definitely been, you know, stuff with mates and events. And, you know, I sold my car when I set up the business. I bought a motorbike. But now I love my motorbike. So, you know, you kind of thought that was a sacrifice at the time, but it turns out, well, I actually like driving bikes. But yeah, I don't think I've sacrificed anything. You know, there's there's nothing that's kind of, I've just loved it.
What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
Go for a steak for 2 hours and talk about it. But I would look at it as that as kind of like the money. And again, there's different ways of looking at it, right? I think my brother and my sister have been like their rocks to me all my life. They've supported me. They've backed me. I'd say I've failed them many times. They have never failed me. So I would look after them. And then I would take the rest of the money and I would make sure my three boys and my wife and my family were looked after and we were set up for the future. And then I'd probably take a chunk of it that I'd just have a bit of fun with.
You know? Beautiful.
Very sensible.
Thank you for that. Well, it's honest. I like it. What's something in your daily routine you wish you started sooner?
I'm brutal with routines. I'm like all in.
You're looking at me like the teacher that's giving you the hard
answers. I know,
answers.
It is. It's just like, but I'm all in, right? And if I'm not all in, I'm the complete opposite, whatever that is. But I'm brutal with routines. Even like, say, exercise. If I decide that I'm going to be going to the gym or whatever it is, I will be there every day for 2 hours nonstop. And then I'll miss one session and you won't see me for 3 years. Right.
Okay.
So that's my problem with routine.
Right.
It's just, it doesn't exist in my life. And I think that's probably why IDPal is one of the successes behind IDPal is because I went all in on IDPal and that's helped drive the business forward. I'd say.
I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You can invest it in one person or one company. Who would that be?
Can I cheat and split it, but have it in?
Oh, that's kind of a wishy-washy answer, but go on. They better be good people now.
Okay. So I think if you were putting 1 million quid into someone, if it's a really, really young company, you're probably going to lose it, right? Because most startups fail.
Yep.
And if it's a well-known company and they're doing loads of really good stuff, it's probably too late to invest, right? So I'm going to look at this differently and I'm going to split the money between a guy, Mark Donnelly. So he has a clothing brand called HUH, or Who? How's your head?
Yes, I followed him online. Yeah, interesting story.
He's had his own battles in life.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty sure we're one of his earlier customers. So we got loads of their hoodies and like our staff wear them all the time. They're cool, you know, and it's got the HUH brand, it's got the IDPal brand. So I think because he's doing good stuff, right? I would give it to him. And in the same train of thought, and this is why I'd split it, I would give the other 500,000 to Brent Pope. So Brent has created a thing called Elephant in the Room. So we've taken part in it where he came and he spoke with our company in January and you could hear a pin drop. He just his own battles as well. So I think Mark and Brent are, you know, on the same vein. And I think the money would be safe and put to good causes.
Good answer. If you just start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
I don't know what it'd be, but I wouldn't reinvent the wheel. I think there's so much opportunity to start a business that just do it better than it currently exists. So I don't know what it would be, to be fair. It's a very, very hard question. I probably have 100 different things I see every day that I just go like, why is that like that? I wouldn't do something that's totally like out there, right? So I wouldn't go the man a drone world, right? Because I just think the legislation, everything around that like, you know, and I hope it's a success because it's really cool, but I just couldn't do that. I would go with something that just you make it better.
Yeah.
And it's easier to
sell. Make it quicker, make it cheaper, make it easier. What's one thing you believe that other people strongly disagree with or would find weird?
Could be controversial, and I've started talking about it more in the last 6 months. I didn't really ever speak about it before. I kind of think we should all be chipped.
Say more.
I think we're in a world where we're being tracked anyways, right? So we all have our mobile devices, we all have location settings, we all have, you know, you're getting an Uber, you're paying for something, you're just, you know, it's you're being tracked anyways, right? So if we all had a chip that, again, look at this access issues and all this kind of different stuff, right? But I think it would make the world a better place because it would reduce crime. It would just reduce like loads of stuff, right? And I think, you know, if there was rules and regulations around, if something like say crime happened, that the chip, you could see who those 12 people were in that area at the time, right? It would put a lot of lawyers and solicitors out of business and help with the courts, and, you know, it could help with so many things. But I just think, I firmly believe in years to come, we will all be chipped.
Well, the feeling gets his way.
Yeah, there you go.
What's one thing you spend money on in your personal life that brings you immense happiness?
So there's a load of standard answers like the food, travel, wine, beer, all that. For value for money, Spotify, €15. I listen to music 24/7, constantly.
And
I love
podcasts, you've got to say as well, yeah.
Yeah, well, this podcast is on Spotify. There you go.
Sure is.
Yeah, I just love music, and for £15, like if Spotify was £200, I'd probably pay it.
I said this to my wife the other day, like we have Alexas everywhere. So we are Pinterest.
Yeah.
We have Alexas all
there. You go again. Like,
and I was just get up in the morning, I was like, Alexa, play Foxy Morning Wake Up. Yeah, I am Narcissist, so I name it after myself.
Yeah.
And we just have these songs to play all through the morning. And then there's like an afternoon mix, then there's an evening mix. We have it on all the time.
Yeah.
We were only talking about it because we were like, oh, it's kind of cool. Well,
and for £15 or £12, whatever it is, class. And you're kind of going like, what, that's, you know, you go out and get a sandwich and a bottle of water. What's that?
It still blows me away. Yeah, I still love the novelty of any song in the world.
Yeah.
Just, hey, play whatever.
Yeah, value is insane.
It's a cool, good answer. What's your final piece of advice to every entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur listening?
Again, there's your stock answers of, you know, always ask for advice, trust your gut, stuff like that. I would have a little warning around for young entrepreneurs, avoiding the vulture advisors and people who try to get involved in your business at an early stage when they don't really have your best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. I just see too much of that. We avoided it, thank God.
A lot of shysters around the scene.
And it's just, they're looking for the board seat, they're looking for the advisory role, you know, and they'll hang around you for 2 or 3 months and they'll lead you down a garden path, and then they'll ask for what they want. So we've been unbelievably lucky with people who have just from day one helped and advised. And look, if we ever, you know, properly succeed, I would like to think that, you know, those people will always be thanked with something, and won't be forgotten. But I just think, just be careful of those. Like, be really careful.
The Irish startup scene is unreal in terms of, we now have exceptional founders who've gone through, built incredible businesses.
Yeah.
But there's also a huge amount of bullshitters, coaches, mentors who have never worked in a startup in their lives. And now they're wanting to be, you know, getting 10% for equity for advice or intros. It's funny, you're the second person in that seat today to say they were asked for,
so it's not unique,
10%. You're not a unique flower. I'm so sorry to break it to you. They were asked for 10% for an intro.
Really? Wow.
So yeah, but that's the advice I love when people come on and share. These are the real stories of, like, because sometimes you kind of, like, you know, put people on pedestals and go, well, they must know what they're saying because they're an advisor.
Do you know what I love is when you go to an event and there's a panel and they're talking about fundraising and all these different things, and you look at them and you go, so that's someone from Microsoft, and that's someone, and you're just going,
Don't start me. We've done so well. Don't get me annoyed.
What?
My hobby horse is the entrepreneur competitions, and the judging panel are all from big multinationals.
Yeah. No clue.
Not one of you. Just because you wrote a check for $2,000. One of you are entrepreneurs. Yeah. Come on.
100%.
Love it. Listen, that was a cracking chat. And you're coming back on in 2 years for the juicy tell-all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Pleasure.
An absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Gary.